Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Hey YA. From great new books to favorite classic reads, from new stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is a bi-weekly podcast here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a book riot podcast hosted by me, Kelly Jensen, and Eric Smith. We're recording on Thursday, April 26, 2018. How's it going, Eric?
Hello.
Hello.
Pretty good. Yeah, it's going pretty good over here.
Good.
You know, this weekend I got my little event with Caleb Roig here in Ann Arbor that I'm very excited about. I'm going to bring the baby. Wife's going to come. We're going to fanboy and fangirl over him. It's going to be great. How are you? What's going on?
I'm good. I just got back from a weekend out in Boise, Idaho, where I taught yoga and talked about feminism in my book, Here We Are, to a group of teens at a teen body positivity camp. Like, it was the coolest thing. Like, if ever I could think of, like, what would be your dream thing to do, that might be it. It was very cool. So
that sounds so great.
Yeah. And it was nice, too, because I gave myself a little extra time while I was out there. And Boise's, like, I think 250 to 300,000 people, so not especially huge. And it was nice to be able to do a bunch of things, but then also at the end of the day, be like, all right, all I want to do is go to the hotel bar with my book and order a drink and dessert. And so I did that and I'm like, this is like the best sort of vacation, you know? It's like I plowed through a bunch of books and I relaxed and it was good. I went to Rediscovered Books on the recommendation of a number of people who are familiar with the city and picked up Arvin Amati's Down and Across and like blew through half of it on the flight home. On the way there, I read cover to cover Honor Code by Kiersey Burkhart, which is a book that looks at rape culture and specifically rape culture in a private school setting. And so that was like a big contrast to what I was reading. And then I was reading also The Wedding Date by Jasmine Guillory, which is an adult romance novel. And that was the one that I was reading with my drink and dessert at the bar. I was like,
is The Wedding Date
you're reading these steamy scenes. It's like the waiter's coming up to you and like, do you need anything else? Like, nope, I'm doing great. Okay, thank you.
Is The Wedding Date that book that ties into Younger?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Now I have to Google.
Either. I wish I did. I know very little. In fact, that was the first like adult romance I've ever read. And it was great. I really enjoyed it. It was very, you know, I'm so used to teen romance and there's nothing wrong with teen romance, but adult romance, it's like, oh yeah, they're actually going to like do things, you know? Mm-hmm. It was just one of those moments I was like, okay, I'm really enjoying this. And also, you know, like I'm way more invested in this than I thought I would be. But in that sort of like, I'm just relaxing and enjoying my drink and my dinner and, you know, the world's going on around me, but like, I'm totally tuned out to what's going on in the world. Cause like, I have to know, are they going to get back together? Of course they're going to get back together. Like that's the whole thing with a romance. But, it was a nice like cream in the middle of an Oreo sandwich of, YA books. So, what have you been reading?
Oh, it's called The Marriage Vacation in that show Younger.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this isn't that.
Yes. I don't know if you've watched that show Younger, but you should. It is about publishing and it's super what's the word? Unrealistic as in terms of how publishing is put together. But I still love it so much and I'll sit there with my wife watching it and like point out all the things that aren't real in publishing and she hates it. And it's
oh man, I have to watch it now.
Oh, it's great. It's like so like sit down and watch like 10 episodes in a day. Like, yes.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm putting it on my to-watch list.
So let's see. As for me, well, even though you gave me that copy of Nova's A Room Away from the Wolves, I haven't been able to dive into it yet. It's like sitting on my coffee table, just haunting me. You know, we've got a while till it comes out. It comes out in like September, I think, right?
Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
I feel like I wait a little bit. Oh, but I don't know. I had my little baby solo for almost 5 days, and my brain kind of turned to mush, and it's really hard to like dig in and read anything when there's been no sleep for that long.
Right.
But do I go to YA jail if I bring up reading a middle grade book?
See, you know, I'm not sure what's... I don't think you go to jail if you're like, oh, it's a middle grade book. I think you go to jail only if you're talking about it like it's a YA book.
Oh, I see. Okay, good. And like, what's in YA jail? You know, I think it's like being stuck with your uncle at Thanksgiving who's like, oh yeah, YA books, like Harry Potter, you know, every day. Like, I think that's
like
that's
vampires.
What's in YA jail. Yes, yes. Oh, like them sparkly vampires. Yes, yes. So yeah, when it comes to the middle grade book, so I'm halfway through Aisha Saeed's Amal Unbound. So it's her follow-up to Written in the Stars, which is like hands down one of my favorite YA novels ever. Came out like, it was like 3 years ago, I think. So anyway, it's about this young girl who has to work for the ruling family of her small village's estate in Pakistan. After she insults the family, sort of by accident, it ends up complicating her life to the extreme, you know, from how the other servants treat her and feel about her to discovering sort of these like dark secrets that the family has and is up to. It'll be out May 8th. It's a quick read. You know, I'm halfway through it. And when I say that, you know, I think I read like 100 pages. So you won't really have to wait long for this one. But, you know, in terms of books that are out that you could pick up in this little ramble of mine, pick up her debut, Written in the Stars. Paperback is super cheap these days, and it is just, it is just a stunning, stunning book.
Yeah, I second that. I really enjoyed that one, and I'm looking forward to, you know, I don't read a whole lot of middle grade, but I'm really excited to pick that one up. So should we just dive into our sponsor and then start going? Okay. So our first sponsor of the show is Summer Constellations by Alicia Savigny. I want to say Savigny, but that's not it. It's Savigny from KCP yes. Loft. When Julia's mother announces that she might be selling the family's campground to a real estate developer, Julia is crushed. How can she stand to leave her childhood home? Then Julia finds an unlikely ally, the developer's son, Nick, who wants to help her family raise the money they need to keep the campground running. Can Julia trust him to conspire against his own father? And could she ever trust him with her heart? That's the real question. This tender story reminds readers of summer's possibilities and how sometimes love is written in the stars.
Hey!
The book clever. That was clever. The book features a strong female protagonist. It's a summer romance with heart and depth. Readers will fall head over heels for Nick, Julia's love interest, but they will also feel for Julia as she begins to see what it will mean to grow up and leave home. The natural surroundings of the campground are fresh and appealing, from the lake to the woods to the stars. Teens who love the outdoors will be especially drawn to the story. We should talk about that sometime, books that are set in the outdoors.
This looks great. This is a me book.
Yeah, oh, totally. It sounds really good. And those who need me to say that book again, it's Summer Constellations by Alicia Savigny from KCP Loft.
Oh my goodness. I worked at summer camps, like sleepaway summer camps, pretty much like every year of my life from when I was like 14 until I was like 25. And they're always so much fun, but there's always a family there, like a family that lived on the giant campground. You know, the father was like a park ranger who like maintained everything. And like, I always romanticized what their life must be like. But it was, you know, there's a possibility it was pretty boring, like being in the woods, sort of closed off from everyone. But it looked awesome. Okay, I'm gonna order this book right now.
Do it. So do you wanna hop in on this one?
Yeah. So this weekend is Indie Bookstore Day. Big fan of Indie Bookstore Day. You know, running to your local indie. I mean, personally, I think Indie Bookstore Day is every day for me. I love going to my new local indies here in Ann Arbor. Now that I live here in Michigan, I spend pretty much, unfortunate amount of money in a store called Literati that's over here. And when I was living in Richmond, I spent a lot of time in The Fountain, which is Maggie Stiefvater's go-to store. Like, you can buy signed copies of her books from them only. Like, she does the personalized books there. So, like, you walk into that bookstore and, like, the back of where where the register is, like, the shelves there are just, like, stacks and stacks and stacks of, like, her signed books that have been personalized that are, you know, set to go in the mail, which I think is awesome. I would love to do an episode or an article on, like, indie bookstores that are, you know, like, bolstered up by big name authors, because, man, I can't even imagine how much business she brings them. So I thought it'd be fun, you know, to talk about some great indie bookstores that focus on children's books in honor of Indie Bookstore Day coming, even though by the time you listen to this, it will have passed. Because, you know, those brave booksellers, they focus on such a, a smaller part of the publishing market for the readers who I think need those books the most. I love you brave booksellers that do this. And I thought it would be fun to talk about a couple, because there are a lot. There are a considerable amount. Can't talk about all of them. Maybe we'll talk about some and talk about others later down the line. I think that might be fun.
Yeah, it's when you brought this up to me, my first response was, well, I've never been to one, and I still think that's true. I think I've been to the Red Balloon in St. Paul.
Yay.
And that was a while ago, and I remember going and thinking it was a very cool place. You're going to talk about another Twin Cities bookstore in a minute, but so when you brought this up, my first thought was, like, I moved in January to a new town, and it's the first place that I've lived in my adult life, like, outside of graduate school, where we actually have an indie bookstore in town. It's like 3 blocks from my house, called Read Between the Lines. And it's wonderful. It's a thriving indie bookstore in, I want to say, small town Illinois, but we're like 25,000 people. So it's not super small. But they have a great children's and YA section, you know, for being a smaller indie bookstore in a smaller town. I'm really impressed with what they have on shelf, and they're awesome, because I'm one of those people that, you know, sometimes I order from the bookstores online that people don't like to talk about. And part of it is habit, because I never had an indie bookstore before, and it used to be 50 miles each way to get to a really terrible Barnes & Noble. So it became easy to just order online, because that was literally my choice. You know, because it takes a certain amount of privilege in terms of time and money and, like, transportation to be able to go to a bookstore if there's not one anywhere locally. And I say locally, like, 50 miles, you know, which is not particularly local either. But so I got in the habit. But now that I have this bookstore, it's been a lot easier to just go on their website, see if they have it in stock or not, and then order it. And they're always great, because they get back to me in, like, no time. I just put an order in for Isabel Quintero, has a graphic novel out. It came out late last month, I believe, March, and it's called Photographic, and it's a biography of a Latina photographer, and I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but they had emailed me back as soon as I put the request in. They're like, oh, the book's on back order. It won't be in until, you know, May 5th. Is that okay? And I was like, you know what? I've got a book or two sitting here. Like, May 5th, I can wait. you know, I'd rather give them the $20 than get it cheaper and quicker from Amazon, because I don't need it right now. You know, and I know that money is going to do better in my own community, and, you know, I can walk there and they're so nice in the store. So, to bring that back to talking about this, it's just, when you brought it up, I was like, man, my experience in indie bookstores is probably a lot different than yours, because it's so limited. Like, having it now, I feel so spoiled and, like, want to use it while I can, because I can.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely, oh man. We'll have to do an indie kidlit bookstore tour. Can Book Riot sponsor that? Maybe we'll talk.
We could do live shows at all of the stores, and it can just be us. Well, first we'll sit and we'll talk, and then we'll go to the shelves and just talk about all the books that we've read on the shelves.
Yes, Perfect. I love this. So circling back to my time in Richmond, so there's this really lovely indie kidlit store called BBGB Books. I don't know what BBGB means. I looked around on their website. I couldn't quite find it. So it's a small shop on the main strip in the Carytown district in the town, which is like this really cute. It was funny. I almost compared it to like the art museum district in Philadelphia, but then I realized that doesn't mean anything to anyone else when I'm trying to describe it. But it's just this, you know, there's museums not too far away. There's like a big historic street full of gigantic, like ancient homes. And there's all these great shops that just line up and down this, like, I don't know, it's probably like a 2 mile stretch of road, boutiques and all the like. And it's a really small shop that's very, like when I think about like kidlit stores, I think about like there being toys everywhere and like paintings and bright colors. And it's very like, you know, I don't know what the right word is, but like, you know, the walls are all just white. The floor is white. You know, everything's very clean and very like in its place. So I don't know, maybe the kids are just very behaved that come in there. So they're able to keep it so nice. But even though it's so little, they get these massive authors coming in there. You know, one day my wife and I are walking up down the street and CeCe Bale was in there, who wrote that El Defo graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And like just visiting the website now, like I noticed that Kwame Alexander is coming by the shop in a couple of weeks. So it's small, but very, very mighty. They have these lovely large shelves that are just packed with YA, middle grade, and other kid lit. And they do subscription boxes full of kid lit, which is absolutely something we need to talk about in another episode.
Yes. Because
kidlit subscription boxes are dangerous. Like, oh my goodness. But yeah, it's a lovely shop near a bunch of ice cream. If you're in Richmond and in the area, I highly recommend you check it out.
So two that are in the Chicago area. One, I've been to both of them, but neither of them are kidlit specific, but have great kidlit and YA lit sections. Women and Children First, which is in Andersonville in the city of Chicago, has a wonderful, wonderful YA selection. And it's a feminist bookstore, so all of the selections are really thoughtful with that in mind. And the first time I went in there, I remember being really blown away that they had a huge selection of queer YA, and that's exactly how they labeled it in the store, so you can find it.
Oh, wow.
It was all in one place. I thought that was the coolest thing. It's like, okay, not only do we acknowledge that these books matter, but, like, we're going to put them all in one place so you can, you know, look through shelves and shelves of them. And I just thought that was really cool. So that one's in the city. It's just north of downtown. And then last night, in fact, I was down in Naperville, Illinois, where Anderson's Books is. And they, I went to Anderson's for an event once when I was in like second grade, but it wasn't at the store. It was at another facility because it was Anna Martin, creator of the Babysitter's Club. So she needed a space a little bit bigger than the indie bookstore could accommodate. And I was at the store for the first time last night and was really impressed with their YA selection. Like, you walk in and I want to say it was like three rows of shelves, and I was like, okay, this is really awesome. They have a lot of stuff here, a lot of backlist stuff. And then I like turned the corner and there was a whole nother set of shelves. And I was like, man, it keeps going. I could find anything that I wanted there. I loved it. I was there to see Siobhan Vivian, author of Stay Sweet, when she was on her tour, and it was nice. They had a nice little space to do the event. And you know, now that I am Chicago area adjacent, it's a lot easier to get down there than it used to be. It's only like an hour and 15 minutes to get down there. So I'm really looking forward to going to more events there because it's close and super easy to park down there. And if anybody's ever been to downtown locations like Naperville, sometimes you have to like really search for a parking spot or pay. Pay parking is a thing you can not have to do. There are free garages for up to 3 hours, which is like perfect. You're going to an event, you're going to the neat bookstore, you know, you're going to eat ice cream or cookie dough, whatever. Both those sorts of shops exist there. And then you head home. Yeah, that's, again, neither are children specific, but have really great and thoughtfully curated YA and kidlit sections.
You know, there is like a kid specific store in Chicago, and the name's escaping me. We'll have to talk about it another time, but like, I know it's near the train station because I've walked there before from there. And when you get inside...
Which train station?
Like the big Chicago train station.
Oh, okay, okay.
And like when you walk inside, there's like just shelves and shelves and shelves of just used YA and middle grade books. Oh. And they do like writing workshops for the kids. And it's like a bookstore slash like, I don't know, almost like a community center type of place. I'll have to look it up later because I think you would like it a lot.
Yeah.
So what else? What else? Oh my goodness. So I don't think you could talk about kidlit bookstores without bringing up Wild Rumpus in Minneapolis. Again, you'll go to YA jail. It's this like beautiful, like huge bookstore that feels like a place you just want to stay in and play. Like while BBGB is like, you know, very clean and very, you know, white walls, maybe don't run around in there. This place, like they want you to run around, has a super warm atmosphere. Everyone is super friendly. And all this might be because of all the animals that are inside. So there are animals everywhere. So Wild Rumpus is full of adorable critters. And I don't mean just like bookstore cats, which you see in every store, or the occasional rare bookstore dog. There are chickens that run all around, all over the place. There's a ferret that's named Ferdinand. There are doves. There's a tarantula. And then my favorite, there are a bunch of chinchillas. There are these chinchillas. There's like this little tunnel passageway you can duck inside and go through and look at all the books that are sort of stacked inside of there, where there's fish and aquariums and all the chinchillas. And it is amazing. Like I'm sure there are other tourist destinations to see in Minneapolis, like, I don't know, the Mall of America or whatever, but I think we should maybe go to Wild Rumpus and skip everything else.
I think that we should go to Wild Rumpus and do a live podcast, and we should have part of it be a story time to the chinchillas.
Yes, yes.
I feel half like this podcast would be our place.
Yes, half the podcast is just us petting all the animals. But yeah, it is delightful.
I see nothing wrong with that.
It is delightful. What else? I can name one more bookstore outside Minneapolis. So you sort of brought it up really quickly. The Red Balloon bookshop. So this one's also in the Twin Cities. It feels very unfair that these two glorious stores are so close by. like I'm very jealous of people that live over here. This one's in St. Paul. So, you know, a nice big welcoming shop with big red balloons painted on the building and a happy sign outside. I feel like Catherine Locke, who wrote The Girl with the Red Balloon, should have, like, partnered with them, maybe, you know? Like,
yeah.
I feel like that would have been really great. But if you visit their Facebook page and just thumb through the photos, you can tell what, like, a warm and, like, sunny place this store is. They have these giant story time book events where, like, the booksellers have puppets and hang out and play with the kids, to the huge tours that come through there, like the Epic Reads Tour and the Fierce Reads Tours go through there with all the YA authors. So Minneapolis residents, I kind of hate you. Enjoy your bookstores. And, you know, if our listeners have bookstores they love, you know, email us about them. We'd love to hear about them.
I agree. We could talk about more, you know, even if we haven't been there. It's just like finding out what's out there and what people are enjoying and like what they're enjoying about those bookstores. So you can always let us know.
So let's see. Do we want to dig into more sponsors?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. This one has a special place in your heart, I think.
It does.
It is sponsor two. The podcast is brought to you by Bookish Boyfriends, A Date with Darcy by Tiffany Schmidt. Sponsored by Amulet Books, an imprint of Abrams. Boys are so much better in the books, at least according to Merrilee Campbell, 15, who thinks real life chivalry is dead and there'd be nothing more romantic than having a guy woo her like the heroes in classic stories. Then she and her best friend Eliza and her younger sister Rory transfer to Reginald R. Hero Prep, where all the boys look like they've stepped off the pages of a romance novel, and it is a truth universally acknowledged that first impressions can be deceiving. Perfect for fans of Jane Austen, classic retelling, and lovers of Mr. Darcy. Now, you're reading this one right now, right, Kelly?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through it, and I'm loving it. I have, like, no... I don't want to say no interest, but I've never read Jane Austen and like have no connections with her or her work. And I'm totally loving this despite that. I mean, I kind of have an idea of what's going on in terms of like some of the characters. Just because when you're a book person, like you can't not know a reference or two, right? So it's totally delightful. I love that the main character is 15. And it's just like it's a clever story that book lovers will love because they'll see so many things in there. And in the story right now, Merrily, the main character, is taking a sophomore lit class, and they're rereading Romeo and Juliet and talking about how whatever perceptions you may have had about the play, you know, the first time you read it, probably aren't the whole of the play. So a lot of like clever stuff in there with writing and romance. And I'm really enjoying it so far.
Nice. And you know, Tiffany Schmidt's one of those authors that like, man, she like bounces around like genre wise, like that, that whole, that like Once Upon a Crime, which is
yes.
a great series title.
Yeah.
So that like duology that came out like 2 years ago. And what was that other one? Like the Bright Before
Right Before Sunrise, yeah.
Yeah, like she hops around a bit, and I like that she plays around a lot in contemporary. She's fun. I'm excited to read the Bookish Boyfriends book too. And
yeah, I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, and I couldn't help but notice that when I like looked up Bookish Boyfriends on Goodreads, it said like Bookish Boyfriends 1. Mm-hmm. So is it a series? Or
I think it's a duology.
Oh, yay.
And,
oh, cool.
And you know what's a bonus is it's paperback. Original, which is really nice because that, you know, is always nice on the pocket. And also, I don't know, I prefer paperbacks in part because, like, I find books to be not precious items, which I know is one of those blasphemous things to say, but I know. But, like, I use and abuse my books. They come with me everywhere. They get shoved into places. They get bent, you know, and it's, like, paperback, I feel way less bad about doing that because you spend, what, $8-$9 on it, and you're like, you know what? The book's going to be loved.
All so, right, so speaking what is of next?
This is a nice segue because I think Tiffany's Once Upon a Crime series sort of fits what we wanted to talk about in this next section. Have you noticed, and I'm sure you have, and I'm sure you have before I even like set you up to think about it, but there's been a huge growth in thrillers in YA in the last couple of years, and it seems to be one of those trends that is not slowing down. You know, like we have seen trends come and go, but the thrillers I keep seeing coming out in good numbers.
No, it's true. I don't know what is I don't know what is happening, but I am sort of all about it.
Yeah.
I love YA thrillers. You know, they're exciting. I like, I feel like I didn't get a lot of them when I was in high school, and I wish I would have.
I'm kind of a genre nerd. Like, I love learning about genres and, like, what distinguishes one from another. So I was like, okay, we can use the phrase YA thriller, but what does it mean? So I did some research and found some interesting things because I'm like, okay, what defines a thriller versus suspense, or what defines a thriller versus a mystery, or what defines a thriller versus a horror? And here's what I've got. It's a little bit of like genre nerdiness to throw at you. So thriller, when used with books, is about the mood rather than being a specific genre. So it can apply across genres. So you can have thrillers, which are mysteries, or thrillers, which are horror. And when you think about thrillers, which are horror, that's really interesting because horror is also more of a mood than it is a genre itself. So like you have, you know, thriller horror is a super, super moody book. Thrillers are generally agreed to be books that bring about excitement, suspense, surprise, and anticipation, from the reader's perspective. They keep readers on the edge of their seat and use things like plot twists, red herrings, and cliffhangers to sort of build that tension throughout. And Wikipedia, you know, the best resource out there. I thought what they had to say about thrillers would be really interesting. They note Homer's The Odyssey may have been one of the first examples of a thriller. And then they also name things like Little Red Riding Hood, The Epic of Gilgamesh, The Count of Monte Cristo as sort of a nice range of what a thriller can be. And I was like, huh, that's a really interesting like way to look at it. So when you think about then suspense, that's the same thing in terms of being a feeling or mood. And it's this idea of fascination mixed with apprehension and tension. So in the broader definition of suspense, the emotion arises when someone is unsure of what will happen in an event. Thus, suspense is that combination of anticipation and anxiety dealing with the outcome of the future. So it's usually referring to an audience's experience. A book can be a suspense thriller, which then refers to the mood of the book and then what it is the reader might take away from that book. So the word thriller is more about the internal look at the book, whereas suspense is more external to the reader. And they work together really nicely. So then a little bit more, like we're getting real nerdy now.
Yeah, no, I love this. You're so much better at explaining this stuff. If it was me, I'd just be like, well, you know, thrillers, they make you uncomfortable. And that would be my
answer. But that's right. I mean, that's right. I looked this stuff up, you know, before digging into it. So, like, I don't know it. This is just stuff that I'm reading and, like, learned and thought was cool. So I'll link to some of these sources because they're fascinating. And this particular one, this is from mysterynet.com. And the note I had in here, it's totally worth reading this whole article if you're a genre lover. It talks about the differences between mystery and thriller, and it says that a suspense thriller has been loosely defined as a story in which the audience is waiting for something significant to happen. The protagonist's job is to prevent the speeding bus from exploding or the aliens from eating the crow. The reader experiences a vicarious thrill by identifying with the hero and the danger he faces, becoming a participant in the story and the chase itself. So in the thriller, you're really in the main character's point of view, like experiencing everything right along with them and feeling that tension and that anxiety as the character does. Whereas a mystery, on the other hand, is a novel of revelation with action more mental than physical. So a significant event can happen, something like a murder, and the protagonist's job is to discover who committed the crime and why. So the dilemma for somebody who writes mysteries is to keep the details of the villain and the crime unidentified so that the protagonist can figure out the whodunit. Again, these are like generalized ideas, but I feel like that gives a good idea of the sense of difference in a thriller and a mystery. And of course, those two things can, you know, cross over with one another and build upon one another. But I think that was a really cool way to look at it. So you had mentioned about wondering where the trend had kind of come, because growing up, I don't remember a whole lot either. I feel like I read a lot of Lois Duncan, but they had been out for a while. And Carolyn B. Cooney, she was another one I read probably all of her books when I was growing up. So right now I'm listening to the audiobook of an adult title called The View from Flyover Country, which is a series of essays by Sarah Kenzor, which is a really fascinating book. It takes on a bunch of different like social and cultural things, but she said something in there that really got me thinking about thrillers. And she said, in an article called More in the Fall of the Mall, which I'll link to in the show notes, she talks about how Gone Girl, which came out in 2012, I believe, she calls it the great book of the recession, and that it's a really good example of the pull away from consumerism and mall culture. And I think when you think about that, it makes a lot of sense why we're seeing that in YA so much now. When you think about like what teen culture is like now, growing up, like the mall was where we went. Mall is what we did, you know, like we hung out at the mall. And now like that we live in a culture where malls are sort of disappearing. By sort of, I mean are disappearing. It's a very different take of consumerism and shopping culture and just like hangout culture is different for teens today.
Yeah, it is. And it's something I've noticed, like, you know, actually going to the mall. My wife and I have the new baby. So sometimes when we try to think of something to do, it's like, well, maybe we can go walk around the mall with the baby in the stroller. So we'll do that. But I don't see all the teenagers, you know, rampaging around the mall like I used to. And, you know, I actually tried to go in Hot Topic to look for like punk rock vinyls, and I had to leave immediately. I had to get out of there. But no, that's really interesting. The idea of the mall culture and everything fading and how that's affecting the books and making these, you know, thrillers come to mind. Like the idea that the adult market, you know, is trickling down into mm-hmm. YA that way. Like Gone Girl isn't made for teenagers, but were they reading it?
Of course. Is it, yeah.
Yeah. Or is it the adults who read YA that are buying the YA for teens looking for something that feels like it was, you know, popular, like they had been reading. I don't know, it makes my brain hurt a lot. And, like, you definitely saw the trend in the adult market when it came to naming the books, you know, like, mm-hmm. The Girl in Cabin 10, The Girl Before, The Good Girl, you know, The Girl, you know, it's just, like, again and again and again. So, I don't know, like, I was trying to think of, like, a popular YA thriller that came out, like, right after Gone Girl, and I kept thinking about, like, We Were Liars, which isn't really a thriller, but it has that whole twisted family mystery kind of thing going on. I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, the big YA thrillers in, like, 2013, 2014.
I feel like that's a really good one to bring up because it was angled as for fans of Gone Girl. And I think it was less so for the thriller aspect and more for the, like, really messed up family aspect. And I think, too, they were really going for that adult reading audience for YA with that one and selling it that way. Because that one got a ton of push behind it. The one thing that I've been sort of chewing on with this, and I'm curious what you think about it, there's sort of a lack of authors of color writing thrillers, or seeing, I should say that we're seeing as frequently as other authors. And as I was like brainstorming what books stood out to me as good thrillers to talk about, I could come up with Sherrielle Smith's Pasadena, which is about a girl whose best friend is found dead in a pool. No one really knows what happens, but they have a lot of theories. And Jude goes out and sort of uncovers a lot of skeletons in the closet as she figures out like what really happened to her friend. I thought, too, of Melinda Lowe's A Line in the Dark. I wonder, I almost would put that more mystery than thriller, though I can see some readers finding it to fit that thriller idea. And that's what I really love about thinking about genre is if thriller is a mood, then it's really more defined by the reader than it is, you know, conventional genre ideas. So what might not be a thriller to me could be a thriller to you, could be a thriller to, you know, the 14-year-old reader picking the book up off the shelf.
Yeah, that's true.
And then the other author I thought of immediately, Stephanie Keen, and we've talked about her books before, but I think all of hers sort of fit that thriller category as well.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And yeah, no, this is a great question. You know, like after you brought it up, I was trying to kick around some of my favorites and like, you know, like Lamar Giles is fantastic. Like he wrote Fake ID, Endangered. He has an Edgar Award nomination.
Yeah.
I think he has two. I don't know. I know he definitely has one. And there's Diana Rodriguez Wallach. She has a YA series with Entangled called Proof of Lies. That's, you know, a bit of a thriller. And she wrote Allegedly.
Tiffany,
no.
Yeah.
Tiffany Jackson?
Tiffany Jackson.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, Allegedly could be considered a thriller.
I think so.
You know, I've seen it pop up. But yeah, it's really hard to name too many, which bums me out. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if there's anything to that or if it's just we haven't seen them as frequently. You know, it's hard to say if there's any particular reason or it's just like we just haven't seen a whole lot yet. So one thing I think about when I think about thrillers is I read a lot more than I think I do, at least in terms of like what the internet categorizes as thriller. And just simply as somebody who reads as much as I do and I'm familiar with how storytelling works, I'm rarely surprised by thrillers and like what's going to happen or the whodunit or the twist. And a lot of times I'm able to guess it in like page 10, right? With like what's going to happen, how it's going to turn. But, I still like reading them that way. I still love seeing what makes them so good and what makes them so, you know, binge worthy, like why people love them so much. You know, my experience as an adult reading thrillers for teens is going to be way different than a 14-year-old picking it up for the first time. And, just simply by having read less, not that they're any less intelligent or capable of understanding the story. It's just a matter of, you know, I've got twice, more than twice, twice a lifetime of time to read books and sort of see these things play out. But I'd mention this. I grew up loving Lois Duncan, and she was very much a suspense thriller author. And I feel like there was a whole generation of books around the time she was publishing, too, sort of doing the things we're seeing now for teen audiences. And I put here, too, like, I was curious what her inspirations were, like, where she started publishing her thrillers and, like, what inspired them. You know, if we look now and think, like, culturally, there's a big movement of them and they've done very well. What was going on at that time? And then sort of as an aside to this, just because I think this is fascinating and horrific, Lois Duncan's daughter was killed tragically when she was, I believe she was 18. And Duncan wrote about it. She wrote a book about it. And she sort of became a secondary like investigator to this because the case itself was never solved, and she wasn't happy with how the investigation went. So when she died in 2016, there still wasn't any closure. She still hadn't sort of gotten an answer to what was going on. And I would just encourage anyone who's fascinated with suspense or anyone who's just fascinated with true crime to check out her book. I can't remember the name of it. It's her memoir about her daughter. And there's also an episode of Unsolved Mysteries that is dedicated to what happened to her daughter and the mystery surrounding it. And that's on, if you have Amazon Prime, it's available on there.
So that sentence just breaks my heart. Like hearing that it's on Unsolved Mysteries, you know, like mm-hmm. It's unsolved. Like that's just, oh, that's so awful. I had no idea about this story. I'm going to have to read up on it.
Yeah, I had sort of forgot, like I knew in the back of my head and sort of forgotten about it. And then my husband and I were watching Unsolved Mysteries because it just came out on streaming, you know, however, a year ago or something. And it's like, we sat down and started watching all of them. And I heard the name Lois and I heard her daughter's name. I was like, oh, I know this woman, you know, like I know her from YA. Like, I don't know her personally, but I know her story. And it's like, oh yeah, I remember learning all this at one point, but I just sort of forgotten about it. And, you know, revisiting that was really not enjoyable, but like gave me a lot to chew on, especially in terms of like thrillers and what we're seeing now. Should we talk about some books?
Yes, please. You have some newer ones on here too that I haven't heard of. So
yeah. Do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. I've definitely talked about our buddy Caleb way too much, so I'm going to dig into another one. Although, please look up Last Scene Leaving and White Rabbit, which White Rabbit just came out. So one thriller that I love a lot, you have some great ones here, but I love The Girl Who Fell by Shannon M. Parker. I might have talked about this one before, too, but it's this, like, it's like this slow burn, like Lifetime-esque, and I mean that as a compliment, like YA novel about a teen who falls in love with a boy that is like clearly like sort of stalking her. Like he randomly shows up at things. He shows up with presents that like there's no reason he should know why she wanted this particular thing. He starts to become like super possessive over all these different things. And it's a case where, like, you as the reader, like, see all this stuff going on and you just want to be like, oh, honey, please get out of this. You know, you need to run away. What are you doing? And, like, even her friends around, like, sort of have an idea that this is all really bad. And it's just great. It's, like, this great, uncomfortable book about, like, a toxic relationship that, like, you see unspooling and getting progressively more dangerous. That's where like the thrills and the horror of it all come into play. But there's nothing you can do about it. You know, like she's not going to listen to you because you're the reader. And she's certainly not listening to her friends. Yeah, I think it's great. Really underrated.
So one I picked this up yesterday at Anderson's because it had a really cool cover that caught my eye. Was Window by Amelia Brunskill, and I know it just came out. So I haven't read it yet, but it's about two very different twin sisters. So one is sort of introverted and quiet and socially reserved. The other sister is outgoing and athletic. And when the athletic, outgoing sister falls to her death while sneaking out of her bedroom window. Jess, the quieter sister, realizes that there may be more to the twin sister that she never knew. And it just sounded so great. It's a twin story. It's got a great cover. Like, everything sounded like it would work. So I'm really looking forward to picking that one up.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to check that one out. You have these great recommendations. What else? What else can I talk about? Why don't you dig into another one? You have some great ones in here.
Sure. One I read that I really enjoyed, like, that I didn't see some of the twists coming, was a couple years ago. It's called Damage Done by Amanda Panich. And it's a story about a girl and her family who have to take on new identities in a new town because the girl's twin brother, Ryan, had shot and killed a bunch of classmates in the band room at their old school. So it's about Lucy slash Julia, because she has the dual identity thing going on, learning how to survive after that and also deal with the traumatic amnesia from just this horrific experience. And it's like one of those thrillers, you know, not, again, as somebody who's not super surprised by what the outcomes were, this was one that like had me from page one and kept me going. And Panich, I know, has another book out, Never Missing, Never Found, I believe. And I haven't read it yet, but I keep meaning to because I love that first one so much.
Nice. I'll check that one out. I've definitely seen the cover. I just haven't read that book. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Allegedly by Tiffany Jackson, since we brought her up earlier. I love the reason that the title is Allegedly, because it's allegedly the main character has killed a baby. So it's this very dark book about this teen girl who, you know, goes to jail and has to, you know, sort of survive navigating the group home life while you're, you know, trying to figure out, like, did she really do it? What is really going on? Who's this guy that sort of floated into her life? It's dark, and it's definitely one of those books that, like, I know, Kelly, you're talking about things you don't see coming. It's one of those books that you don't see things coming.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's intense. You know, it's definitely not one of those books to, I don't know, if you're having a hard day, pick it up. It's sort of a book that you need to be really ready for.
Yeah, I really like that one. Again, another one that sort of kept me going the whole time because I didn't know what was going on or what was going to happen.
I'm excited for her next book, that Monday's Not Coming, with that like bright red cover.
It was good. I read it. It was good. It's very different, but has some of the elements that readers who loved Allegedly will really appreciate. Less thriller, more mystery. As if I speak in genre expertise now. The next one I'm going to talk about is one that's not out yet. It's coming out in September, and it's called Sadie by Courtney Summers. The book will definitely appeal to readers who like Serial-like podcasts, and that'll make sense in a second. I feel like you hear that quite a bit, especially for thrillers and mysteries. You know, like comparing them to these really popular podcasts is easy. But this one, the book follows a girl named Sadie who is out to get revenge, justice for the man who killed her little sister. So Sadie has gone, quote, unquote, missing from home. And it's her going to take care of business, if you will. But the framing of the greater story is actually a podcast hosted by a man named West McCray, who hears the story about Sadie going missing and becomes obsessed with finding her, even though she might not want to be found. So it's told in these two perspectives. You have the podcast sort of telling the, like, what we know now, you know, which is always steps behind the now, which is what Sadie's doing, how she's going to find the guy who killed her sister, and, like, the sort of pieces she needs to put together for herself. And she doesn't even know that this podcast is going on that's telling her story. It's a really fascinating look at, how we tell stories about people and how we sort of frame their lives and their experiences as entertainment versus sort of like the reality of what's going on. It's a really smart book. And that's out, I think, the first week in September.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I shouldn't be that surprised. It is Courtney Summers. I still need to read her zombie book, though.
Yeah, you What else you got?
Let me see. So this is one I haven't read yet. I just noticed it sitting on my bookshelf, and I thought I would bring it up. Maybe you've read it. I don't know. It's that Suicide Notes from Beautiful Girls by Lynn Weingarten.
I have not read it, no.
Yeah, it has this like super iconic looking cover with these matches that are mm-hmm. burnt out. Yeah, it's a book about a girl named June who is trying to figure out what really happened to her friend Delia. It's the rumor and what everyone is going by is that Delia killed herself in her stepfather's shed, lighting it on fire in what is a very horrible sounding death. And it's a year later, and she is convinced that that is not how things went. And she's on a quest to unravel the truth behind it. She thinks she was murdered. It's not one I've read, but it is sitting on my shelf, and it is supposedly really great. And I don't know. I thought I'd bring it up since it's a popular one in the genre there.
Yeah, it's another one that I saw so much good stuff about it when it came out, and then I haven't gotten to it yet. But I definitely want to. The last one I'll talk about is a little bit, I find the publication history of this book just as fascinating as the book itself. The book was great. And it's called As Red as Blood by Salas Samuka. And when it came out, it was compared to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And it was one of those comparisons where I was like, sure. You know, like I hear that a lot. And, you know, having gotten through The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo books, which if you haven't read, they're super boring. Like all this unnecessary minute detail in there. But it has a great female main character. And anyway, so the comparison to As Red as Blood, I thought, was super fair. It was actually a really good comp for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's a Nordic noir book, so you know where it's sort of set. And I'll just read the description and then step back to the publication history about why I'm reading the description. So the description is, Lumiki Anderson has made it a rule to stay out of things that do not involve her. She knows all too well that trouble comes to those who stick their nose where it doesn't belong. But Lumiki's rule is put to the test when she uncovers thousands of washed euro notes hung to dry in her school's dark room and three of her classmates with blood on their hands, literally. A web of lies and deception now has Lumiki on the run from those determined to get the money back, no matter the cost. So this is actually a trilogy, and it was the first books were published via Amazon's YA imprint. I can't remember the name of it. And I found the first copy at my local library, and I was like, wow. I was sort of surprised because they hadn't had other Amazon titles before. And this one I knew had gotten a ton of money from selling rights across the world. That's boring insider speech for it was going to be published in a lot of places. Anyway, I could never find the second book, ever. I know it was published, but, couldn't find it anywhere. So I only read the first book, and I remember loving it and wanting to read the next one. So I never found it, never found it, never found it. Well, last year, 2 years ago, I guess now, at the tail end of 2016, one of the big publishers, I want to say Crown, but that might not be correct, published it again in the U.S., but only published the first book. So I don't know. I don't know whatever happened to the rest of that series. And it's been so long now that if I want to read the rest of the series, wherever it is, I have to go back and read the first one. But then you're like, well, do you read the one that came out through Amazon? Do you read the one that came out through the other publisher? I don't know. Which is a long story to say, the publication of this one is just as fascinating as the book itself. Because, there's a lot of questions. I've got a lot of questions about it. So, but if you can track it down, it's excellent. And that's As Red as Blood by Salas Samuka. And it's in translation from, I want to say Finnish. That might not be correct. But it's sort of that same, Scandinavian noir, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo feel to it.
Nice. I'll have to look that one up. Are we going to talk about Meg Abbott?
Well, I think we should. Yes. It's looking at my notes. I was like, oh, yeah, we can't not talk about that. Basically, I just wanted to say I want Megan Abbott to write an honest-to-goodness YA book. Her adult thrillers are awesome. I love them. I love that she uses teen protagonists. And, well, she has in the last few. Not all of them are thrillers. But the most recent ones have been, and they've had teen main characters, and they've been so good. They have great crossover appeal, and honestly, I just want to see her go all out with YA and, you know, like really amp up the melodrama of her book to reach that like YA audience.
No, I agree so much. Like the Fever, like I love the Fever. I actually got into her books thinking they were YA. Like I picked up the Fever thinking it was a YA book. And, you know, whenever I think about the book, I think about that Catherine Howe novel, Conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like those books are so close story-wise and tackled such similar things. But one's an adult book with teens and the other is a YA book about teens. She's great. I actually ran into her at the Virginia Festival of the Book, and it was one of the most embarrassing, like, fanboy type of things ever. Because, like, I was, like, walking to one of my events to go talk at, like, this school. And I saw her like loading up her car and I was like, oh my God, that's Megan Abbott. Should I say hi? What do I do? Oh my goodness. And like, I just kind of like walked over there and I was like, hey, I'm sorry. This is super weird, but you were great. And I know you're leaving, but I just need to tell you you're great. And then I just walked away and I like vague tweeted about it. Like I just embarrassed myself saying hi to Megan Abbott and she saw it. And she was very nice. And she was like, oh no, I didn't think you were weird. But I think I was weird because she was just trying to pack up her car and leave. And here I come, you know, in tears. So, yeah, her books are great.
All right. That's my favorite embarrassing fanboy story of yours so far.
It's good. I like that every episode of our podcast is like YA confessional. Like it's good.
That was a good one. That was a really good one. Since we didn't get to talk about as many inclusive books with thrillers as I think both of us would have preferred to, we thought we would end the show talking about a very specific demographic. And for those who might not be aware, May is considered Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. So we thought, why not end the show talking about a bunch of awesome YA books by Asian American authors? Do you want to start?
Yes, I love that so much. So I'll start with one that I think is super underrated, and I want more people to read her books. It's Lydia Kang. I love her Control duology. You know, superpowers, got the outcast teenagers, got those fancy nightclubs. It's just like lush sci-fi future that, you know, is just so impossible to put down. She also had a really great smaller book come out last year called The November Girl, where out on a, I think it's Lake, oh shoot, what lake is it? It's one of the Great
Isn't
Lakes.
Isn't it Superior? I think it's Superior, because I think we talked about that before.
Yeah, it's on Lake Superior, and a girl is like the physical like manifestation of like a storm, and she's just violence personified, and comes across a boy who's basically been abused his whole life, and like, you know, it's like a girl that is supposed to be violence and a boy that is a victim of violence coming together, and it's just this beautiful mashing of contemporary and fantasy. I love her books. She's Korean American and writes amazing stories, and you should look for her.
So another Korean-American whose stories, she's got three books, and I adore each of them for very different reasons, is Maureen Gu. Her third book comes out May 8th, and it's called The Way You Make Me Feel, and that's the one I'm going to talk about. It follows a girl named Clara, who is sort of a prankster, and she loves being the center of attention when it comes to, like, being a distraction. Like, she really likes that. When I was growing up, they always called it being squirrely, which I thought was, like, the funniest description. But, like, that's a perfect description for it. You know, like, nothing terrible. Just, like, you know, just pushing the boundaries, if you will. And her dad, who owns a food truck, decides that she needs to take a job at his food truck for the summer. And, oh, yeah, she is going to be working alongside this girl named Rose that she goes to school with, who is uptight and that she cannot stand. So it's a book about food trucks. It's a book about friendships, about perceptions of other people. And it's about romance. It's swoony. There's a really fabulous father-daughter relationship in this one. And Maureen's most recent one before this book, Oh man, I'm blanking on the title now. Something about love. I'll link to it in the show notes. Was another one that had a great father-daughter relationship. Anyway, this one, like all of her other books, is also really funny. The first pages, when you get to know Clara and sort of how she behaves, it's hard not to laugh out loud. And, you know, it's got all the ingredients of, like, a great read that's just gonna, like, make you walk away feeling all the good, like, heart swoony feels inside. So if you haven't read her books, like, fix that.
Yeah, I didn't know her new book was about a food. Now I'm going to pick that up. It's been like a wish list item in my agent life to get like a food truck YA novel, and looks like it exists. So good. I'm going to read it. Let's see. Who else for me? So Cindy Pond is another author I would love to talk about. I've definitely talked about Want to Death, and I'm sorry, I'm going to do it again. So it takes place in a sci-fi dystopia where everyone wears these exosuits and everyone's dying from the pollution being so bad. Well, the rich people aren't dying. The rich people are fine. They have those suits, and they're running around, you know, breathing the filtered air from the suits that they are able to afford. The poor people, unfortunately, cannot afford such luxuries and are dying on the streets from both pollution and a sort of weird unknown disease that seems to be affecting the poor people. So it focuses on a teen and his ragtag group of friends who are trying to bring down the technology and the people controlling it all from the inside, and it's just great. I've talked about it a lot on here, and everyone should be reading it, as well as her other books like Silver Phoenix, which is a wonderful oh goodness, when that book came out like 10 years ago, novel that everyone should be picking up.
My next pick is Rin Chupeco. She's Filipina, and she wrote the Girl from the Well series and the Bone Witch series, which I know the second book in that series just came out. I was going to talk about the Girl from the Well, which is it's a take on the Okiku story. For anybody who's familiar with Japanese horror at all, will be familiar with that. Or if that's sort of unfamiliar to you, think The Ring, the movie The Ring. It's a take on that story, and it's dark, and it's horror, and it's one of those books that like gives you sort of the creeps and the chills at the same time, and I loved it. I'm a big fan of like Japanese horror style, and a big fan of the Okiku mythology, so this one was just like right up my alley and perfect. In a way that's like eerie and haunting and also just a lot of fun. I mean, I find horror to be fun, so I found this to be a great fun one.
Nice. So I'll talk about American Panda by Gloria Chow. I love this book. It's so funny. If you go and you look up her Twitter account, there's a great like sort of webcomic that someone did for her that I feel like encapsulates the whole book really well, but it's this really great story about a teen who's off to college, who's a young girl at college that skipped the grade and goes off to MIT, who is like wrestling with her parents' expectations, and kind of just wants to be herself. They want her to be a doctor. They have all these sort of, you know, lofty goals for her, but you know, it's gonna be kind of hard to be a doctor when you're like a germaphobe and like you don't want any of these things. So it's gonna be pretty hard. It's gonna be a bit of a struggle. So it's this really funny, you know, coming of age later in your teen life sort of book. And for readers that really want to read YA about teens in college, I feel like this is a perfect one because she's still young enough to feel like a teenager, but you know, at that sort of older stage in her life. I love it. It's funny, charming, and she has more books coming out, and I'm very excited.
So my next one is a long-running YA author that I don't. She hasn't put out a new book in a little while, so readers who are newer readers may not be familiar with her work, but will get to be familiar with her work if they start with the backlist or stumble upon her next book coming out in July. And that's Justina Chen. She's Taiwanese American. And her next book comes out this year. It's called Lovely, Dark, and Deep. But the one I wanted to talk about is North of Beautiful, which came out, I want to say, almost 10 years ago as well. It came out at the same time as an Alyssa Noel book that had the same exact cover. So if you look up North of Beautiful, you'll be like, oh, that cover's really familiar. It's because it was on another book at the same time, a very different book. But North of Beautiful is about a girl named Tara who... She's really beautiful, and she has some distinguishing features about her. She's really tall, but one of the most distinguishing ones is she has a port wine stain on her face, and she has this dream of getting out of her small town in the Northwest United States and going to a college out on the East Coast, but she has a father who's super controlling, and that dream might not happen. But then by accident, and that's a purposeful choice of words there, she meets this boy named Jacob, who is a quirky goth boy, and when their lives intersect, her life may never be the same. It's a more literary novel and one that earned so many acclaims and strong reviews when it came out, and I think it's one that probably still holds up really well and would be a good introduction to the sort of work that Chen writes.
Nice. Oh man, you're giving me so many. That's a problem with this podcast. I end up having so many more things to read. So I guess for my last one, I want to bring up Forest of a Thousand Lanterns by Julie Dow. So it's an East Asian reimagining of the Evil Queen legend, aka the Bad Queen in Snow White.
Yeah,
it's really fun. Yes. It's really fun, really dark, and just the writing is just so beautiful. And the sequel comes out, I'm not quite sure, soon. I know I've seen the cover. It's like this bright red cover that like is going to contrast so well with the other book on the shelf. I can't wait to have them next to each other.
Ooh, I need to read that one still. And I am debating, like, which one do I want to talk about? Because I wrote a few down. But I think I'll end with someone who is doing something a little bit different. And that's Jen Wang. She's Chinese-American. I just picked up her graphic novel that she just put out called The Prince and the Dressmaker. Just got it from the library, so I haven't read it yet. But it has had so many great reviews and raves about it that I'm looking forward to it. But I came to know her work because she's the artist behind Cory Doctorow's graphic novel In Real Life. So that was sort of my introduction to her art, and I'm really fascinated to see her art play then with her writing in this next book.
So with In Real Life, a little after the book came out, Jen put a bunch of the original drawings that she did for the book that got scanned and made into the book on her website for sale.
Ooh.
And maybe back when I, you know, wasn't a literary agent and had a job that paid money, I bought one of them. So I have one of the original drawings from the book hanging in my little office. I am a big fan. I like her quite a bit.
I feel like that's the perfect, like, bow tie to this podcast. You know, we sort of talked about, you know, your fanboy confessions, and that's sort of like a great, like, you know, perfect way to round this out. So I will, when I put together the show notes, I'll throw the other authors that I put down for this segment into the bottom of the notes so readers who want even more can find more. And we've got a couple of great posts on Asian American YA authors and Asian American YA characters that people on Book Riot have written. I'll throw those links in as well so readers can have a nice huge reading list to pick through, make their way through. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. If you have any feedback on the show, go ahead and leave it on Apple Podcasts. Let us know how we're doing. And when you do that, you help other people find our podcast as well. Thanks again to today's sponsors for helping make the show possible. You can follow me, Kelly Jensen, on Twitter and Instagram as Verona Kelly Mars. And you can follow Eric Smith on Twitter and Instagram as Eric Smith Rocks. And we will talk to you again in 2 weeks. Bye.